Such a privilege to be here this morning, and I was just thinking as we were having communion that can you imagine that moment, you know, where Jesus was in the tomb, he was laying there all wrapped up and everything, the demons were celebrating, you know, victory, everything is done, and then his finger twitched and life started coming back into his body. Can you but imagine how the devil and all his hosts must have felt when the one that they wanted to kill and that have ultimate victory suddenly came to life. And that is the reason why we can call ourselves sons and daughters of the Most High this morning. That we are saved, that we can worship, that we can celebrate, that we can have joy. Because the grave cannot hold us anymore. We cannot be stuck there. We have eternal life. Thank you, Chris, for being excited. That is amazing. The rest of you, please let you. Is that not an awesome thought for us as saints? Oh, man, and we can walk in this earth and just go about our lives with joy before God because we have been saved. We won't still have to be saved. We have been. We are saved. Whew. Come on. So this morning, I must just say, we just returned from the Tankwa Karoo. Who's ever been in the Tankwa Karoo? None of you. You should get out more. It is probably one of the most beautiful places we've been in. The nothing grows this high there. There's absolutely nothing. And it's beautiful. We traveled, to give an idea, almost 400 kilometers just on gravel roads. It is a shaking experience like you just cannot imagine because they sort of had their rainy season. They haven't scraped the roads yet, so everything is shaking. But it was such a privilege to be in that desolate place, that empty place, but to be so aware of God, to see His beauty, to see His magnificence, to see everything that He has created, even in that place. You know, from the, you must see the tiny flowers that are there. We apparently came in there at a very good season because the one guy that we met said, it's never this, call it green. Not that everything was green, but well, in actual fact, we as we were driving the one day, we came around this bend and here was this tree. Just one tree. In the middle of nowhere, like in green. I mean, this I don't know how to describe that green. It's a green that you don't see here. It was, it's almost like it was glowing. So green this thing was. And we all went like, what? This green tree in the middle of this desert place. In actual fact, there was only two trees that we saw that were that green in that entire place. And then you see the ruins of the places, you know, where people have lived. And it's incredible to think that people are actually able to live in such a desolate place. Farmers with their sheep and stuff that graze there and so on. And the Tankwa Karoo is in a restoration phase where they're actually bringing in some wild and so on. But for us, it was probably the most incredible experience. And I think next day we'll definitely be back. But not 3 days this time. 3 days was way too short to see what there was. So, and I want to encourage you to get out more. This morning I want to preach about hedged in. And one of the things that we saw in the Tankwa Karoo is these little stone walls that was everywhere in the place. Obviously, you have these houses now that are broken down, that are, you know, in disarray. We can share photos at some point maybe, but then you have these walls, stone walls, because that's one thing the Tankwa Karoo has a lot of is stone. In actual fact, it's considered one of the places that eats up tires like it's going out of fashion. And just for us and our friends, I had to do 6 tire plugs just in the 3 days to keep us going. Fortunately, praise the Lord, we didn't lose any tires, but I became a pro in putting in plugs to keep us going. But incredible to see these little stone walls, which was meant for one thing, to keep the sheep safe. You know, you can see the kraal, as they call it. You know, when you walk in there, the house is there and everything is there. And then you way at the one side, you have this little stone wall. And we know this stone wall. Nah, the wall of China. Have you ever, if you've been there? Okay, we should get out more. But this wall is massive. In actual fact, to give you some idea of this thing, it is a total length of 21,196.18 kilometers. That is, actual fact, half the length of the equator. Built by man. Actually, was built because of a rumor of an attack, and the dynasty at that time freaked out and said, we're gonna build this wall because we want to make sure that we don't get attacked from the north. It's an average height of 6 to 7 meters. It's an average width of 6.5 meters. That's quite a big wall. And it's about 2,700 years old, and it's still standing. Okay, it took more than 1 million laborers to build it. And we moan that we have to go to work. Okay, and it spans across 50 regions in the north of China. You know, when we look at this wall, and yes, I think I definitely want to visit that someday, but it was meant for one purpose, to hedge in the people. It was built out of fear and for protection. And they say if you go into this wall, it is not just a flat wall. There's rooms and stuff and all sorts of stuff in there. And it's actually multiple walls that were built to make up this thing. Interesting thing about it wasn't one long build. It was a whole bunch of short builds which were later connected to one another. When this, I can't remember the guy's name, got this rumor and he's decided we're going to close up everything. And I think for us, we all desire to dwell safely, right? We all want to live a life that we know is safe. You know, you buy a house where you buy it because it's safe. And when we are threatened, we go to extreme measures like this dynasty to make sure that we are safe. You know, some people will take the law in their own hands even to make sure that their families are safe. You have to watch some of these soapies or whatever series, and then you know, when someone is in danger, they lose all sense of morality and they do weird stuff, even if they know they're wrong, to protect and cover those that they want to, you know, that is part of their lives. And if we look at Scripture, we actually see that the people in the Bible understood God's protection may be a bit differently than what we understood it at the moment. And David in particular, if you look about his life, you know, you will see him walking with God in a way. And, you know, just to say this, but we often read that, you know, he was a man after God's heart. And we think, you know, it's because he could write psalms and sing amazing, you know, or write poems and sing songs and so on. But I believe it's because of the way that he walked before God. In the way that he faced challenges, in everything that, I mean, you just read David's life. If I had his life, I think I would have run away. Because, yes, he had stuff, man. There was a lot of stuff going on. But I think he understood God's protection a bit differently than we do. And if you read the Psalms, you will see so many of him just declaring that protection. So I want to read Psalm 18, verse 1 to 6. Just to illustrate that, he says, I love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock, in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised, and I am saved from my enemies. The cords of death encompassed me. The torrents of destruction assailed me. The cords of Sheol entangled me. The snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I called upon the Lord to my God, and I cried for help. From his temple, He heard my voice and my cry. To him, my cry reached him, his ears. And if I read this, you know, this is a powerful declaration even for us when we face stuff. To take this psalm and actually declare it even into our own situation. Just how he understands God's protection, how he looks to God to actually watch over him and protect him at this time. And in this psalm, it is so clear that he faces quite a bit of distress here. I mean, the words that he uses here is quite strong and powerful. You know, the snare of death confronted me. You know, it's like, what's that other thing? The cords of Sheol entangled me. It's not a place that I think, you know, you're going to have a picnic. When you're in this kind of situation, you can even see the desperateness in him just crying out to God, saying, God, I need you to save me. He saw God as his rock and his fortress, his deliverer. He's declaring this even in a very, very bad situation. He understood this. You know, today, we don't have fortresses and rocks and stuff. You know, we don't live in caves and so on. But man, we've got electric fencing and burglar bars. You know, and we've got the security companies on and armed response. And, you know, and sometimes we place our trust in those things. We understand that, you know, we have to have those things so that we can feel safe. And like I said in the beginning, we all will go through extremes to make sure that me and my family and those that I love actually dwell safely. So we actually spend a lot of money to make sure that we are safe. But here I see David looking at God, facing God in the distressful situation, and he sees it a bit different. And he chooses actually to take refuge in God, to make him his fortress, to make him that place, that hiding place where he is going to hide. And he contributes his safety entirely to God, nothing else. And I believe that's why he was a man after God's heart, because, you know, if you read about David, he was quite a violent man. I mean, songs were sung about him. You know, Saul slays his 1,000, but David, his 10,000s. You didn't want to mess with David. I mean, this guy killed a giant and a bear and a lion. So you don't go to him and I go, you will die. All right, so this man clearly had skills. You know, I think he had all the qualities to go like, but I've got this. I can protect myself. And no one messed with David. Yet David, in his person, was in a place where he did not trust in his own skill, his wisdom, his ability to read war and to make war and everything. He trusted completely in God for his safety. And that is why when Saul was in the cave, that he could have just cut off a little bit and say, I'm not a little part of his robe and say, I will not touch the anointed of the Lord. Why? Because he knew God was the one who protected him. In actual fact, when we consider that our God is sovereign, that our God is omnipresent, that he's omniscient, that he knows everything, that he's all powerful, then my question to us this morning is, so why do we fear? If this is our God, who is able to raise Jesus from the dead, to save us, if he can do anything that he wants, why do we fear? And whom do we fear? Is it not when we take our eyes off of him that we actually fear? David in Psalm 27 verse 1 says this, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Do you get what I'm saying? In that he understood God's protection maybe a bit differently than what we do. That he's in the space where he fears no one because God is his security. In actual fact, to use a term from today's life, he put all his eggs in one basket. And that God has got this. And he is my fortress, my protector. He's the one that covers me. And you see a resolve in David's life here. You see a commitment to trust only in God. And like I said, he had all the skills to take care of himself. You know, with a mannekamp, he would not even take meat with, because he will find his own meat. Right, so men, we're going to take our pellet guns, go hunting, ne? Benny, met die 303 by die huis los. Ons gaan nie hom saam vind. But even if you look at David's life, if you consider his life, if you go and sit and study his life, then you realize that that's the way that he lived. Why? Because he took on a bear. He took on a lion. I don't know so lucky about that one, that he had the boldness, because of the trust in his God, that he was willing to do that. He stepped in and slayed a giant. He didn't want to even put on the armor. He just walked into the battle with his slingerfell. I'm going to sort this guy out. What boldness. You know, even when he started serving in Israel, he went to war, not based on his skill, but in his trust in God. So you see that complete trust in David's life flowing and oozing out through everything that he did. You know, when we look at him in the flesh, we go like, yes, this is a powerful man, you know. But he was a man after God's heart because he knew and trusted God completely, fully. Psalm 91, we read it so often, you know, you'll often see it in the back of a car, you know, protected by Psalm 91. I used to have that on my car. Psalm 91 reads as follows. He says, he who dwells. Now listen carefully. Listen carefully. Properly. Listen properly. How it starts. The position, the place from where it starts. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God, in whom I trust. For he will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence, which is kind of apt for today in our life. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and a buckler. You will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in darkness, nor the destruction that wastes the noonday. 1,000 may fall on your side and 10,000 on your right hand, but it will not come near you. For those people that read this, and do you trust God fully in this way? It starts off, he who dwells, who makes his home, who lives, who is permanently there in the shelter of the Most High. So there's a positioning, there's a place which we see in David's life as he worships God, as he walks with God. He understands that I need to be with God to see this manifest in my life. And because I am in the shadow of the Almighty, these things I know will happen in my life. This protection will be upon my life. It's not because I make the confession daily, you know, because I speak it out, but it's because I am in the presence of Most High God. I'm dwelling there. I'm living there. That is the place, the position. And then God answers. In verse 14 of Psalm 91, it says, because he holds fast to me in love, not duty, not habit, but because he holds on to me in love, because this person is in love with me. He clings to me. He grabs onto me. He holds on to me like I'm the only thing that will save him. You know, when you're out in the ocean and you have that raft thing or piece of wood, you will cling to it for dear life. And that's the sense that I get here. It says this person is clinging to God because there's no other option for him to trust in. It says, because he holds fast to me in love, I will deliver him. You see, God is no man's debtor. When we cling to him, when we put our trust in him, he is the one that will save us. And don't expect him to save you like you think it should be done. You know, like that boat now comes suddenly. You know, maybe he sends a dolphin. Or you get swallowed by a big fish and then get spit out 3 days later. Can you imagine that? Darkness, like a frot fist, everything floating around you there in the middle of the soap. Ay, caramba. No wonder people were scared of him when he walked out there. In any case, sidetrack. Right. It says, because he holds fast to me in love, I will deliver him. I will protect him. Because he knows my name, when he calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him. Wow. Wow. Is this not what we desire? Is this not what we want to see in our lives so desperately? Is this not what we want to see in our families' lives? Is this protection? You know, when I pray, God answers, stuff happens. It's because he holds fast to me in love. Because he's committed to me. Because he loves me. That's where God just comes. And then, of course, you cannot speak about protection and not speak about Job. And in Job 1, verse 1 to 3, we read the following. There was a man in the land of Uz, whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. Now, write that on a tombstone. Do you ever see that on a tombstone? Wow. So the testimony of Job starts off with quite a powerful statement that there's this man who's dwelling in the land, and this guy is blameless and upright. And he fears God and he turns away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters who possessed 7,000 sheep. I don't know what that looks like. 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys. Jeepers. And very many servants, so that this man was the greatest in all the people of the East. So the testimony of Job, as we start off, is amazing. And we see this man prospering and that are truly blessed. But I like verse 1 and how God just, you know, how the Bible positioned this man. And it says a lot of who Job actually was. Now, if you read the book, you'll see how he goes through different phases. And, you know, him and his friends have this discussions, and he takes on God at some point, and then God sorts him out in a loving and beautiful way. The end of Job is, you know, when God starts to speak, it is incredible. If you listen to what God is saying, you know, can you do this and can you do that, etc. It is amazing. And in verse 6 of chapter 1, it continues, says, now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came along them. Now, why was he there? Then the Lord said to Satan, from where have you come? Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it. And then God says this. Nah, this is the Lord speaking. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him on the earth. A blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. Wow. This is the Lord speaking about his life, about this man. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. Now, the Hebrew word here for the word hedge means this: to protect, as one who's defends, as one is defended whose house is on a farm, is hedged in either with fencing with thorns. Sorry, I can't read this morning. It's difficult. with an enclosure of stakes or palisades. Now, in the different forms of this word, it means barbed irons, enclosed and guard for danger. It is a defense around. So clearly, what Satan is saying is, God, you have put a hedge around him and his family. You have made sure that nothing and no one can get into Job's life and his family. You know, when I read that, it struck me. It really did, that I read that so many times, but for the first time, it stood out for me how this hedge that was around Job was impenetrable. It was completely closed off, and that God blessed him in all that he did. Such a powerful testimony, and you know, the one God speaks about Job's life, and then the devil has this confession of how God has blessed him. And I thought, wow, Lord, when you hedge in someone, you do it amazingly. That even the devil has to confess that no one can get to this person. Him and all his foes could do nothing to Job. He had to get special permission from the Lord Most High to do anything to Job. Now, if you read Job's journey and what the devil does to him, then we have no reason to complain about anything. Because in one day, he literally loses everything. Sons, daughters, everything. Camels, the whole works. How would you feel? Stripped of everything. And if you read it, you know, the one servant pitches and he gives him the bad news. And while he's still busy giving the bad news, the next servant arrives. And all these servants come and I'm the only one that survived. And I go like, wow. So when God lifted that hedge, they could get to him. But because that hedge was in place, they cannot get to Job. The hedge was in place because Job did four things. And I thought we must look at that. He was blameless before God. Now, blameless is a very strong word, is it not? It's like when you read about Daniel, you know, when they wanted to sort out Daniel and get him out of the kingdom, it reads that they could find nothing against him. That they had to pass a law against his religion to get something against him to chuck him into the lion's den. He was blameless. And here we see this man walking before God, and he is blameless. In other words, you can find nothing against him. You know, so easily we can justify a small lie or not doing something or not obeying something or whatever. You know, we can so easily do it. But if I read this, I understand he had this hedge around him because he was blameless before God. The second thing is he was an upright man. He was honest. He was he had great concern for what was right, having high moral standards in all areas of life. So when you meet Job, you would realize that he's not just your average guy. You know, where people actually came to Job to counsel him because of this uprightness in his life. Honest, great concern for what is right. This is the kind of person you want you to counsel you. The third thing is, he feared God and he only worshipped him. In a world that was ridden with all sorts of idols and stuff, Job chose to worship only the Lord. He focused on God. And then the fourth thing, he turned away from evil. He turned away from evil. So in other words, when he saw something and he knew it was evil, he turned away immediately. Walked the other way. Get out of there. He didn't flirt with it. He didn't, you know, try and work around it slightly, you know. He just completely walked away with it. It's the kind of man that I would like to have a conversation with, that I would love to be in my life, to counsel me and speak into my life and help me to be holy as my God is holy, to walk uprightly before God. This is the kind of man that I want to live with. But this is why God put this hedge around Job that nothing and no one can actually. Job maintained this hedge in this way, that he walked before God blamelessly. Sure. And again, we see the devil's confession. You have put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side. Do we desire that for our lives? That we have that kind of hedge around us, that the devil has to ask permission from the Lord to mess with us. Come on. That's how it should be. That the devil has to confess that you are blessed. That he can do nothing to you because God has you. So do you understand why I say that the gentlemen and the ladies in the Bible understood God's protection and blessing maybe a bit different than ours? We can so easily justify why we have stuff. But saints, as we walk before God, may we come to this place as the saints of old to understand who our God is, how he protects us, how he covers us, how from every side, that nothing and no one can do anything against him. They walked in this way because their focus, their attention, their whole life was shaped and fashioned in such a way that they pursued God in everything. Every little detail. Doesn't matter what they faced. And listen, you, same with Job, same with David, and same with so many other of the saints in the Bible. When they faced stuff, they ran to God and they saw his protection and his deliverance. Even in the Bible, we see when Israel failed to consult God and just did their own thing, that the pawpaw hit the fan and they were annihilated. But when they repented and they turned to God, that they were restored. And God fought for them in incredible ways. So these guys were completely devoted to God. They kept his laws. And they walked with him. And I guess that's the challenge for us today. In a world that is fast changing, and we don't know what is coming in this next season, but for us to today make that decision that God, I'm going to trust fully, completely, and utterly in you, regardless of anything that comes my way. That, Father, my priority will be to seek your face, to be in your presence, to dwell in your courts, to be there so that my life will be an outflow of your glory and your anointing upon it. You know, saints, if God puts a hedge around us at this time like that, do you know how frustrated the devil will be? Because he can do nothing against us. And I desire that. I desire that the Lord will be on us and over our lives in such a way that the devil cannot do anything. And even, you know, like with Job, if the devil does get it, permission to do anything to us, that we will be able to walk through it in such a way that God will at the end restore even to him more than what he had. Yes, he went through a terrible thing. And I don't want to go through anything he went through. Thank you. But you see, at the end, God actually rebukes his friends and says to him, let Job pray for you. And unless he prays for you, I'm going to kill you. That's really, go read it. It was crazy. If your friends don't pray, if Job doesn't pray for you, we're done. So I would have gone to Job and said, Job, you better pray, man. Psalm 20 verse 1 to end off says this, may the Lord answer you in the day of trouble. May the name of the God of Jacob protect you. May the Lord answer you in the day of trouble, and may the name of God of Jacob protect you. May that be our inheritance, saints. May that be the way that we walk, that we call on no other, that we seek no other, that we desire no other but the one who came to save the world, the one who died for us. In every circumstance, in everything that we face, may we call upon the name of the Lord and may we see His deliverance in our lives. May we not get distracted, sidetracked by trusting in other stuff. May our wisdom fail us as we pursue Him and get godly wisdom for the season. Saints, I believe God wants to do amazing things for us. This journey is set before us. His hands are stretched out. He wants to lead us in this. And all we have to do is take His hand and go and be in His presence.